Colonel Russell Collins, Rear 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Colonel Collins?
Yes, I was born in Truro on the 26th of April, 1923.
And what did your father do for a living?
Well, my father at that time had a coach building business. He'd done his apprenticeship as a wheelwright and coach builder. And then he had his own business in Truro after the war, but unfortunately the combination of the Depression and the coaches being superseded by motor cars really meant that his business collapsed, so he went into other things then.
How many were there in the family?
Well, at that time, there was my elder sister, no longer with us, unfortunately, and myself. That was why we lived in Truro. Later on, another four or five siblings were born, of whom one died in infancy, but the other four survived.
When did you move from Truro?
We moved from Truro in 1930.
So when you were about seven?
Actually, correction, my father's business folded, I think, a bit before that, and with what he got, little he got for it, he took a small holding a few miles out of Truro and reared cattle and pigs and sold milk, and he used to take the milk into Newquay, which is the biggest nearest town, and that faded as well in the Depression. Now, you know, times were extremely hard then in the late 20s, and so in 1930 he was without any prospects really, and he came to Bodmin to look for employment, and he passed himself off, having been trained for some woodworking, he passed himself off as a carpenter and got a job in the building industry up here in Bodmin. So we moved up here, well, to Nansdallan, first of all, which is just a few miles out of the town, and then into a council house here in Bodmin.
During the Depression, you know, when things were quite hard for your father, did the family suffer? I mean, did you notice that times were hard, or did they sort of shield it from you?
Well, initially, when I was a small boy, I mean, I wasn't aware of that at all, because we lived on this little farmstead, and there were animals around, and, you know, and kittens and things like that, and we were well fed and comfortable. But as I grew older, when we came up here and were living in a council house, times were extremely hard then, and my father had no employment and was living on, on the dole, really. And by then, my parents had four surviving children, and then two more came. So in the 30s, you know, things were about the turn of the 1930 to 30, until the war, were pretty tough. The move into the council house was quite a step up, I might say, because the cottage we had in Nansdallan from 1930 to 32, and I clearly remember going to school there, the cottage had no running water and no indoor sanitation and no gas and no electricity. And that's hard to think now, and I mean, that's quite clear. And when we moved into a council house here in Dublin, you know, there was gas laid on and electricity. And we had a bath. So, and then, fortunately, if I might go on that, when we came here, my father was fortunate to be able to buy this place in 1936. And this is a larger house.
That's two Coombury.
Coombury, two Chapel Lane, Bodmin, yes. It was known just then as Coombury, Bodmin. Bodmin was relatively small. Population was 5,000. That's about three times that.
How had he been able to afford it? Had his carpentering been going well?
No, he had a bank loan. He lived on a bank loan. I remember this very clearly. And also, the coach building premises in Truro, he never sold those, and he rented those to a blacksmith. And he used to go down once a quarter and collect the rent for that. It was a very small sum. It was £25 or something like that, a quarter. But it just kept him going, that, and with a bank loan.
Now, what about your education?
Well, my education, primary school, of course, first. First of all, then where, you know, I started school at a place called Short Mains End, which was the nearest school to that little small holding I referred to, and that's about 3 miles outside of Cornwall, outside of Truro. And then I went on from there to Namstallan, as I mentioned. And then when we came here to Bodmin, I went to the board school here in Bodmin, which incidentally celebrated its centenary earlier this year. And I did rather well there.
Was it actually a boarding school then?
No, it wasn't a boarding school. I beg your pardon. It was, I should clarify that. It was known as the board school. There were two primary schools in the town. One was the church school, which is like the current voluntary aided Church of England school. The other was the county council school, or it was Board of Education, but it was known as the board school. It was the county board.
You said you did well there.
Well, I did, because when we came to take the examination to, it was called a preliminary examination to enter the competition for special places at the grammar school. Normally people had to pay for secondary education at that time, but there were certain scholarship places available, and you had to do a qualifying thing, which is a bit like the 11 plus, basic three arms stuff. And I passed out of that top in Cornwall. That was a big thing. That was when I was 10. So that was the board school. And then I went to what was then known as Bodmin County School, which is the main secondary school here in Bodmin. Shortly before that, it had been a private school known as Harley School. But then it became, there were various developments in secondary education at that time. And for a time, it was known as the Bodmin County School, and then it became the Bodmin County Grammar School. So I gained a so-called special place there, which meant to say that there were no fees payable. And I went there in 1933.
Now, what about your education there?
Of course, it was leading up to the war, and I was there from 1933 until 1940. I suppose it was 33 I went there. I'm surprised. Yes, I was there 7 years. And the first 5 years was spent working up to the school certificate examination, which I think I took when I was about 15 and a half or something like that. And in those days, where they used to take the Cambridge school certificate. Like many boys at that time, I didn't do as much work as I should have done, and I was a bit slack and a bit unruly, and quite honestly, very frustrated, I think, looking back. I mean, they did their best, the staff there, but, it was very unfulfilling. The music, I'm very fond of music, things like that. There was no physics taught there, and I'm quite interested in things, natural science like that. The chemistry teaching was very good, and the art, and so not that I'm artistic much at all, not in the visual arts, but looking back, I feel that I had a very sort of impoverished secondary education compared to what my own sons had, for example, at a public boarding school, as public school as boarders. So, but still, I did get my school certificate with exemption from London matriculation. But the war was imminent then. I think I took that exam in 1938, yes.
Now, at school, had you had any interest in sport besides?
Well, I was very interested, and I was quite athletic in a way, but I'm being a very short chap. The facilities were rather meagre, and for example, I often think cricket, I would quite like to play cricket, but the bats, I realise now, they were just all too big and too heavy for me. And the sportsmaster used to show how you do a forward, I could hardly pick up the bat. Ludicrous, really. I used to play a bit of soccer, because I was quite nimble, quite fleet of foot, and I could run quite well. There were very limited facilities. I'm not condemning the staff or the school. They did the best they could at that time. But compared with the facilities the young have now in this country, in this county, we did have a bit of tennis. We had two tennis courts in the school. And one was introduced to tennis. I wasn't introduced to hockey. That was a girls' game. I was in the army. We played a lot of hockey, and I was quite successful there. But so sports not a big thing at school. Well, I played for the school football team, you know, that sort of thing.
Was there an officers' training corps? Or?
No, there was no officers' training corps, and I had no familiarisation at all with things military beyond the fact that, of course, the depot of the DCLI was here in Bodmin, and I used to pass the gate on the way to school, and one saw the soldiers drilling there and that sort of thing, but it was all, you know, an absolutely alien world to me. There was a sergeant major there who came from the same village of Stillians in West Cornwall as my father, and they used to meet from time to time, but I knew nothing about the army. I used to peer through the gates sometimes when marquees were erected for the sergeant's mess ball and that sort of thing, but I had absolutely no idea what it implied at all.
Were you in any of the boys' organisations? I'm thinking things like the Boys' Brigade, Boy Scouts, things like that.
Well, I'm not, unfortunately, I have to say again, not the Boy Scouts. I don't know quite why, except possibly the troop was run by, you know, very often affiliated to the church. And my mother was a very staunch Methodist. And although my father had been brought up as an Anglican and a choir boy and that sort of thing, we were brought up as Methodists. And that's another thing in a way. I have nothing against the Methodist church, but of course, I didn't have the opportunity, which I always regret, of being a choir boy, you know, and possibly a scout and that sort of thing. But they didn't have boys in the choir in the Methodist church. So there's no military connection. And
Were you able to pursue your interest in music outside the school at all?
Well, yes. I mean, that's where my interest was really centred, outside the school, because I was, that's one thing my parents did afford for me. From the age of 10, I was given piano lessons until I had to prepare for my school certificates. I think I had about 4 years piano lessons, which I loved and did very well at. And, you know, the way that parents often have difficulty to get children to practice. Well, now, if I gave trouble in that way, all they had to do was to threaten that they would stop the lessons. And this made me practice, so I found that very fulfilling, and I was quite a successful pianist, and then I was taught the rudiments of the violin as well, and the rudiments of the church organ. So that was really quite beneficial to me in later life.
Now, so you'd passed your school certificate, that was 1938.
Yes.
What was the next step then?
Well, the next step again, well, in a word, I wasted 2 years, if not four, really. I was only 15 and a half. I mean, there was nothing else for it but for me to continue at school with a view to taking the higher school certificate. It was obvious that I had some aptitude for, you know, the sciences. But, as I say, physics wasn't taught at the school. We did a little bit of elementary physics. The maths in the sixth form was done in a very, very sketchy sort of way. You know, that we sat in one form room, and the master was more concerned about whether war was going to break out or not. You know, that's what was on his mind, on everybody's mind at that time.
What did you know of the situation in Germany, well, in Europe? I mean, did you have any real knowledge or interest in it at the time, 38, 39?
Well, sadly, in a way, not. But I think I was sort of underprivileged in that regard, too, really, because we had, you know, because of straitened circumstances, we had very little in the way of newspapers in the house. We had no radio. You can believe it now. Not only no TV, but no radio. And very occasional, you know, the poorer newspapers. And I really didn't understand, although I was 15, 16, I knew there was a sense of sort of impending problem, but I had no sort of objective approach of my own to it at all. I just didn't really understand it, but I was conscious of other people were worried about it.
Were you still at school when war broke out then?
Yes.
Do you remember the outbreak of war at all?
Very clearly, the actual day, yes, because it was in the school holidays. We hadn't gone back to school. September the 3rd, wasn't it? And I was away for staying with a cousin of mine down where my parents and my mother's old home, which was still farmed by her elder brother, and his son, Vivian, no longer with us again, sadly. I used to go and stay with him for a week or two, and I was with them, and we'd been to chapel that morning, and I just can't remember if the service was interrupted, but I well remember hearing. They had a radio, and I remember hearing Chamberlain's voice saying, whatever it was, you know, no such undertaking has been given, and consequently we are at war with Germany. And I remember very, very clearly, because this farm was not far from Falmouth, and instructions were already out, or current, they'd been provisional instructions already been given about blackouts and that sort of thing. And my cousin, who was able to drive, got out of the car, and they had a car on that farm, and drove down to Falmouth. And we went up to Pendennis Castle, which is rather sort of point, you know, there's that great port, the biggest natural harbour in the world, next to Rio de Janeiro, I think it is. And there are these two castles, built, I believe, by Henry VIII, Pendennis on one side, and St. Mawes on the other, guarding those portals. And so I was there on the day of war broke out. And we had to mask the lights of the car when we went back.
How did you do that?
Well, initially with, I'm not sure if they were already, not being a car owner myself, I'm not sure of the detail, but I mean there were available little sort of cardboard or similar material hooded things which would fit into the, in front of the glass, that just showed a very, very weak light down onto the road in front through sort of shutters, rather like a Venetian blind.
What was the atmosphere in Falmouth that day?
Well, there was a very, very tense, I would say. There was a sense of apprehension, and nobody knew quite, you know, what was happening and what was going to happen. There was a sense of foreboding.
There weren't any celebrations. People weren't pleased at all.
No, not in any way that I saw, no.
Did you think seriously about the war? Did you really think it would involve you, for instance, personally? Or?
Well, I can't remember thinking that at all, no. I can't remember. I suppose one must have had vague notions of it. How old did I say I was? I was 17. I was more concerned at that time with what I was going to do. Let's think, 17. I have to think a moment.
You were just due back to school.
That's right.
You were 16.
I was actually 16 at that time, wasn't I? 1939. And I was due to go back to school. The main difference that happened then was, in that year at school, was, of course, the air raid precautions which had to be taken by all schools.
What do you remember of them?
Well, I remember, it seems ludicrous now, but the drill, our drill, was to get out of the building. That was the first thing. And so when the alarm went, when the air raid warning went, the whole school trailed out in crocodile fashion up the hill onto the open ground, up onto the beacon. And we sort of skulked in the hedges up there, away from the building. It was only about, no more than half a mile from the building, or buildings. I suppose that was regarded as being the safest sort of thing. And then I remember on the way, I remember anti-aircraft guns being put up. There's a railway bridge just down near where we used to live. Near where we lived formerly, because the school playing field was down there. That's when we lived in the council house before we came here. And on a railway bridge there was a light anti-aircraft gun, which was always manned there. And so, you know, those were the memories that day, going onto the beacon for air raid precautionary.
That you said that was at first, that was the system. Did the air raid precautions change, or did you always just...
Well, I was only in school for another year then. And, when we got to a sort of friendly war stage, I think... I just can't remember. Well, I remember that was what we had to do.
How was life at the school affected by war? Did you lose masters? Did some of the senior boys join up, that sort of thing?
I don't have any particular recollection of that in connection with the school. I do remember the headmaster giving some gruesome tales and telling us about the horror of war and from his own experiences in the First World War, where he'd been wounded and so on. I remember clearly the headmaster telling us the sort of things, you know, quite frightening things that could happen, low shellfire and that sort of thing. But I don't now remember it having a big personal impact on me. Of course, I can't say for certainty that it didn't. And of course, people were going into the services. Yes, of course, it comes back to me. Some of my classmates, who were perhaps a little bit older, were perhaps going into the RAF as cadets. That was the smart thing to do then, was to go in the RAF, which was the, you know, the bright blue thing to do. And two or three of my fellows, it may have been a little bit later, because they would have had to be perhaps a little bit older, although I suppose if they were 17, they really could have gone into the RAF then. I can think of two or three like that. I don't remember any going into the army. And I don't remember thinking, because I was thinking then I would be going to college, you see, I was still thinking that. And indeed, it was decided I should do in the end. Quite honestly, I hadn't made much progress. I didn't pass any higher certificate, what would be called A-levels now.
Did you take them, or...?
No, I didn't even take them, and I don't know why. I was preparing to take them, and then I got stricken shortly before the exams, as I recall, with appendicitis. And then something, I don't know, went wrong in the operation, but not long after that, while I was still convalescing, I produced an enormous abscess in my side here, and I had to go back into hospital. And I think for one reason or another, I don't remember actually taking the higher school series. But because I was exempt from the London matriculation, in order to go to university or university college that I was destined for at Exeter, the qualification required was matriculation, that London matriculation. And although I didn't take the matric as such, one could get exemption from it from one's school certificate results. And so I was qualified to go to the university or university college to redo my A-levels or corresponding things then. There used to be an intermediate degree. And so I went there to do my inter BSc in double maths, physics and chemistry. As I mentioned before, I'd never done the physics before. So of course I didn't pass it, you see. And so after 2 years, I passed the other things, but I was referred in physics and I still had that hanging over my head.
So from 1940, for 2 years, you were at Exeter.
Absolutely right, yes.
And where did you live in Exeter?
In College Hall. Exeter Hall, it was known as, but it had a previous name, Kilmorey, which is always known by the students of the college. It was never known as Exeter Hall, it was just a formal title for it. But, yes, I was there for 2 years, and they were a sort of momentous time, really. I mean, I suppose grew up in that time because I'd led a very sheltered life. Do you know, when you think of how people travel these days, and even people with poor backgrounds, if you like, such as we had, they were not as bad now. But I had never been out of Cornwall except until I was 17. It's unbelievable these days, isn't it, when you think where the youngsters go and what they see and what they do. So, I mean, I regret very much the narrowness of my background. I knew nothing about anything, obviously. And when I went to Exeter, of course, I learned all sorts of things. I mean, how to smoke and how to drink, how to go out with girls, And I met my wife there. She was a student there at the same time.
So you were a fairly typical student for the time, I would have.
For 2 years, that's right. Failed my exams. But the significant thing was the Exeter Blitz.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Was there many raids on Exeter during that time?
It seemed there were a lot. And matter of fact, they had a 50th anniversary. Anniversary is the right word. Recently, at Exeter, they had exhibitions and so on in the city about, and they had newspapers published about it and so on. And once again, the funny thing about memory, but my memory doesn't accord exactly. In fact, one of the main Blitz days, I don't think I could have been there on that occasion. Yet it seemed to me. I mean, we were preoccupied with fire watching, and you mentioned the Officers Training Corps earlier. There was a training corps there, which we had to join. Any able-bodied man, young student, had to do that. And it was a sort of combined training corps. We were military, dressed in army uniform, but anybody would go into that. And we were sort of established as a unit of the Home Guard. And we wore Home Guard.
Did it have a name or number, that the battalion or company?
It was Exeter University OT. I think it was still called OTC then, rather than Combined Cadet Force, as it is now. I don't remember it having a number. I remember we had a Sergeant Major Shoulder was the man, and we used to sing, we are Fred Carno's Army and that sort of thing. Or Alfie Shoulder's Army. I did my basic military training there.
Now, how often would you have to attend OTC classes or drills?
Well, I can't remember exactly, but I mean, it was fairly frequent. I mean, I usually thought, once a week or once a fortnight, something like that. It was quite an important thing, because we had to be in a state of readiness. We were given some arms training. We didn't fire any live ammunition, but we handled weapons as far as I remember. So I'm not absolutely sure about that. We may only have done foot drill. No, I think we did do some weapon. We certainly did some weapon handling.
To what level of foot drill would you get?
Forming up on parade, dressing, by the right or whatever, open order, marching, close order, about turns, turn to the right or left and about turn, and then on the line of march, wheeling. And I remember doing all those things, because we had to take in turns to be the squad commander. And so all the foot drill, really. And I can't remember so clearly about the arms drill. But I know
did you enjoy the foot drill? I mean, did you see the point of it? Some people find it boring and don't see why people do it. Did you understand at that age why there was the concentration?
I took it all in good part, I must say. I don't know whether I enjoyed it as a bit of a lark. I mean, at least it was something different, and I hadn't had the opportunity to do any of that sort of thing. I mean, it was a form of exercise in a way, and I didn't mind it, and I was quite good at it, I have to say, quite successful at it. When I was in command of the squad, I felt confident I could do it all right. And so, in a way, I didn't mind at all.
Did you have a parade voice, parade ground voice, did you?
I suppose I must have done or developed one.
It boosted your confidence, though, controlling the squad.
Yes. I mean, I remember once giving the wrong word of command, and but it didn't cow me at all. I just imposed my will, even though it was the wrong thing, you see. And I can remember that. And I remember doing elementary field craft training.
Were some people not able to command the squad, would you say?
Oh, yes. It was quite clear.
So what would they do that was wrong?
Oh, they just... I can think of one particular chap. I mean, he was a very nice fellow, but he was just sort of a quiet, introspective chap who you know, didn't have any sort of stamp of authority and couldn't, even when pretending, you know, he just couldn't impose himself and would change his mind and things like that. Well, I mean, you know,